Where are all the women in South African politics? Now, I know what you're doing. You're taking a gasp of breath. You're about to scream out, Dan, what are you talking about? So loud that the cars next to you on the highway can hear you, or that everybody else sitting in that food court desperately trying to shovel something into their becks before their unreasonable managers force them back to their desks hears you shouting, Dan, what are you saying, Dan? South Africa is world famous, one of the best in the world when it comes to gender equality in politics. Over the last 10 to 20 years, anything between 45 and 50% of the members of parliament have been women. South Africa's got a great track record of having women in politics. And I know, you're right, I know, they are there. But where in politics are the women in our political system? Because I'm sure you've been thinking about who you're going to vote for on the 29th of May. And I'm sure you've gone through a bunch of different alternatives. And I'm willing to bet that you may not have considered a political party led by a woman. Or if you have, maybe one. You can let me know if I'm wrong. I'd be amazed. Because the top five, maybe even arguably the top 10 parties, by how much they're probably going to get, the size of their support and votership in South Africa, are all led by men. Their deputies are also men. Off the top of my head, the most prominent political party with a woman leader is the Good Party, Patricia de Lille's party, but they're tracking to get like 1% or maybe 2%, probably outside of the top 10 South African political parties. And after that, there's the South African Rainbow Alliance, Colleen Makobele's party, but I only know about them because I was on the same TV show that she was. And honestly, Sarah's got a few posters up in certain parts of the country, but the best chance that Sarah has of getting any votes is somebody looking at the ballot and seeing the word Sarah, thinking it's short for Sarafina, and thinking they're voting for Whoopi Goldberg to be president of South Africa. And it's so odd because more women are registered to vote than men are in South Africa. Significantly more. Some projections say it's around 55% women to 45% men. And yet, where are the women in the highest positions of power in South African politics? That's the issue today. This is the issue with women in politics and how men still dominate in South Africa. This is the issue with Dan Korda, because we all know that South Africa is a movie. Welcome to the watch party. South Africa is wild and overwhelming, and on this show we explain, analyze, and understand the biggest news stories and issues facing this country every single week. Two episodes of The Issue come out every single week on podcast and also in video form on YouTube, and we also release weekly exclusive episodes of interviews and analysis on Patreon. Go find us there. Lastly, if you're new here and enjoy the episode, it would be so wonderful if you clicked subscribe or follow. It makes a huge difference as we develop the show going forward. Right, let's get into it. So let's start with how South African politics is in the modern moment. And yes, South Africa has one of the largest percentages of women holding positions in politics of any country in the whole world. But when it comes to the true positions of power, president, vice president, leaders and deputy leaders of parties, ministers in key, all-powerful positions, often that have a huge amount of say over the lives of women in South Africa, well, when it comes to those positions, it's like that old Charlie Sheen soapy. It's just men, 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 manly men, 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 men. And you know, it blows my mind because South Africa is one of the worst countries in the world to be a woman. To be a woman in South Africa here is always dangerous and often awful. And yet, the ministries, the key positions in South Africa's policing and justice systems are overwhelmingly held by men. Think about the ministries and the positions and departments that could really make a difference, should be making a difference in the fight against gender-based violence. Because let's be honest, we are losing the battle against gender-based violence. A cute little pinky swear we're really trying, we're going to hold a conference and get the relevant stakeholders involved or whatever, basically every few years from Cyril Ramaphosa, when not just an awful thing happens to a woman, that happens all the time, but when something happens to a woman that is so bad that it breaks through the numbness and the whole country has a freak out, like Uyenene's tragic death, that hasn't changed anything. That's not going to cut it. And the justice minister in South Africa is a man. The police minister is a man. The minister of healthcare is a man. All of their most significant deputies, or most of them, are men. And these are the departments that have failed to create a safer South Africa through failing to create effective policing in South Africa for women. These are the people who have not been able to create a police service that makes streets, workplaces, and homes safe for women and children. The justice system has not meaningfully reformed to better help women despite years of trying. The justice system that's supposed to be able to take action to preemptively protect women and to help them when they have been victims of something terrible, put away men who've committed evil, actually provide justice. And the healthcare system is still being hollowed out, defunded. And what that often means is the most vulnerable people in society suffer. And what that means is women, poor people, people of color, and particularly poor black women. So yes, there are a significant number of women, nearly as many as men in South Africa's parliament and the National Council of Provinces. But when it really comes down to it, president, deputy president, heads of the security cluster, heads of the Justice Department, heads of healthcare are overwhelmingly and have for a long time been overwhelmingly men. And the best that we have to offer as far as women in significant positions go are, frankly, important but less affecting ministries. We are used to having women being ministers of communications, ministers of tourism, ministers obviously of women and children. Important roles that have something to offer to South African society. That's why these ministries exist. But truly not roles that can have a deep and lasting, quick change to the plight of women in South Africa. And beyond that, yeah, women are members of parliament. They are often on committees, often though pigeonholed into like gender committees or committees on helping women and children, and not much more than that. Whereas still, there's a thick as thick glass ceiling that says only men have the true positions of leadership and true positions of power. So how did we get here? Because like many things involving the new South Africa, we actually started pretty well in the 90s. There was a strong feminist agenda within the African National Congress in 1994. The African National Congress was the only party to voluntarily commit to providing a quota of members of parliament, elected representatives, who were at least 30% of them women. And in the first South African parliament under Nelson Mandela, many, many feminist activists, powerful women, got into parliament, and they were also the leaders of a women's movement at the time called the Women's National Coalition. And because of that influence, a lot of stuff got done really quickly, which actually made South Africa's legal system, in terms of the bills passed by parliament, one of the envies of the world. In 1996, the Choice of Termination of Pregnancy Act was enshrined by South Africa's parliament. In 1998, the Domestic Violence Act, the Maintenance Act, and the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act all were also enshrined in the law. And later on in 2007, parliament created the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act. But many feminist activists, women, left parliament in 1999. Under the second parliament, Thabo Mbeki was the president of South Africa. He was far less interested in what became known as the feminist agenda. And so a lot of the moves to help women through South Africa's parliament lost momentum. And since then, the story has been ineffective men, disappointing men in positions of real power, not doing anything to turn the tide on gender-based violence, an absolute pandemic, an unfathomable crisis in South Africa. So what do we have now in the ruling party, the African National Congress? Well, now we have, and for a long time we've had, the ANC Women's League. They came to prominence in the 2000s and essentially became the de facto group of people that the ANC would turn to on women's matters, matters of women. And members of the ANC Women's League have featured prominently in women's groups and gender committees and the likes. But the problem with the ANC Women's League is that when all of the leaders of your party are still men, as the ANC has had, obviously, of course, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma nearly changed that in 2017, but it didn't happen. So when virtually all of your leaders, your big guys, are men, your first incentive, your first priority as the ANC Women's League, just like every other part of the ANC, is the advancement of the party, to make sure that those men, or at least the party led by those men, stay in power and gain more power and hold South Africa for themselves. And that really limits what the ANC Women's League has said and done. Because let's be honest, the gender-based violence crisis in South Africa, the pandemic, was set in stone and created by the apartheid state. But the ANC government in the last 30 years has actually, particularly in the last 20 years, done little, if anything at all, not been effective at all in turning the tide. So where does gender-based violence come from? There are a bunch of different contributing factors. Many of them are social factors. They are systemic. They come from poverty and inequality and unemployment and people being homeless and people not being provided basic services. So the dysfunctioning of a dysfunctional society. And the ANC is the party that's not been able to address those systemic crises in South Africa. But the Women's League can't out and say, you're right, it's the ANC's fault. It's our leading men's fault that they haven't changed this. And that means that for a bunch of different reasons, gender-based violence still happens here worse than nearly anywhere else in the world. And the other reason is shambolic policing and an ineffective justice system. And once again, the ANC Women's League can't come down hard on the police force or the justice system because they are led by ANC leaders, ANC men. And so what the Women's League has chosen to do as probably the most powerful group of women in politics in South Africa for the last two decades, if not longer, what they've chosen to do is take this weird conservative agenda that the real problem, the real reason why gender-based violence is such a widespread pandemic in South Africa is not the fact that there's systemic cultures and dysfunctions in society that creates violent men, and is also not the fault of a failed police force or a failing justice system. No, they've said that the problem is immorality. And they've argued that kind of right wing, we need a return to traditional family values. The problem in South Africa is a failing of morality, which is weird because are they saying that South Africa is the least moral place on earth, or at least that South Africans are less moral or devout or godly, because there's always a Christian undertone with the ANC Women's League, than any other population of people in the world? They've never gone that far, but I mean, that's kind of the implication, right? If that's what is the problem. And as always happens with this criticism, this right-wing criticism, is that it never calls out the men or identifies the crisis of men violating and abusing women and children. What it does is it says there's a moral malaise and traditional family values have fallen apart, and that is used to scapegoat women as much, if not even worse, than men. So you'll see ANC Women's League members criticizing women for living in a modern way, essentially saying it's your fault, you've welcomed it, you've been immoral, you've welcomed this treatment, you're a part of the falling apart of the traditional family values that we want in South Africa. They will find ways to blame women for falling pregnant, particularly to blame girls, not of age girls in schools. They will blame them for the fact that they've fallen pregnant. They will take any opportunity to avoid blaming men or a system that has created so many men committing so many awful atrocities. And every now and again, of course, the Women's League will go and they'll protest for show outside of a courtroom when somebody is on trial for rape, and they'll say that rapists deserve to rot in jail. But that's not enough, because that protest is not going to cause more rapists to rot in jail. What they are avoiding, what they are trying not to do, is actually call out the real systemic issue in South Africa's society, because the ANC presides over and is either unable, unwilling, or disinterested in changing that crisis system. And that's just like the philosophical problem of the ANC Women's League, because of course, they've also said some nonsense often over the years, like in 2013, when one of their leaders infamously said that South Africa wasn't ready for a woman president. Now, by saying that, either she meant that South Africa is a deeply sexist, patriarchally dominant place, which is misogynistic, and ultimately South Africa's people will only vote for men. But she probably doesn't want us to interpret it like that, because remember, the ANC's Women's League tries as best they can to avoid critiquing South African society as a whole and the men in it, because they don't want to critique how the ANC has failed to change the plight of women and the gender disparity in South African society. So she probably didn't mean that first one, that South Africa is a sexist place that doesn't want women. In which case, there's only one other option, which is the deeply sexist idea that women are not capable of leading, that men are better leaders, and that women just don't have it in them. And they still haven't created even one woman who is able to lead and be an effective president in South Africa. Pretty regressive, pretty contemptible for the organization that claims to be the place where they get all of the best and most competent of South Africa's women leaders, and they really push women's issues and take it forward. Almost a year later, another leader in the ANC Women's League said that it would be fighting a losing battle if it tried to push for a female president. That kind of sounds like the first option from the earlier choice, saying that, ah, you know, South Africa sucks. They don't like women. They don't want women to be leaders. It's a misogynistic, patriarchal place. Then in 2017, for the ANC National Leadership Conference, the ANC Women's League were given 64 delegate spots. So they were able to send a delegation of 64 members to the National Conference to represent the Women's League. And they couldn't find 64. In fact, they ended up sending 58 women and then six what they called male experts. So the Women's League was not even capable of mustering 64 women that they thought were decent enough, of certain enough caliber to go and represent the Women's League at the National Elective Conference, which says a lot about the work of the ANC Women's League, such that the Women's League doesn't even have confidence in its own ability to create enough leaders and a strong delegation fully of 64 women. And then an ANC Women's leader, when justifying the fact that they had sent six male experts to represent the Women's League, said, "Sometimes we women lose debates because we become emotional. So now we want experts to argue." There it is. The ANC Women's League exhibiting one of the classic sexist notions about women, that they just aren't as good as the dudes because they can't keep the feels in check. They can't just hold the feels down enough to mount a logical, clear argument. And I'm glad that broadly the world is now turning around to the truth, which is that men are extremely emotional and emotionally volatile and very, very often don't keep their cool. And it's only ever men who punch walls and televisions, never women. And only last week, when the Daily Maverick hosted their big event, The Gathering, which is about the state of the nation and where politics and business and the economy and the country is and where it might be going forward, in the final session, there was a Royal Rumble, the likes of which would have made WWE proud, because Daily Maverick invited all of the leaders of these political parties, all of these men onto the stage, and they lost control of their feelings. They shouted over each other. They were petulant and petty. They didn't wait for each other's turn to speak. They hurled insults at each other. And rightly, a Daily Maverick journalist came out at the end and said, "Hey guys, maybe we should have some women in leadership." In fact, out of all of those leaders, Herman Mashaba, John Steenhuisen, Gayton McKenzie, and more, all of them acting like six-year-olds on sugar rushes who've had their favorite toys taken away from them, the only adult on the stage was the IFP's Velenkosi Hlabisa. Everybody else were throwing tantrums. But no, the ANC Women's League says that men are hyper-rational, can hold their emotions, can hold their temper. Women just don't got it, guys. And just now, in 2023, the ANC Women's League elected a new president, Sisisi Tolashe. And she is the Deputy Minister of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities in the presidency. And she said, "The Women's League exists to address patriarchal challenges within society. They're a problem for women in particular. The organization has made strides in confronting patriarchy. However, there are still challenges." But the ANC Secretary General Fikile Mbalula had called for the Women's League not to be in the spotlight for political squabbles, but rather for fighting for women's rights. And Tolashe said that they would heed that call, that instruction from Fikile Mbalula. Essentially, we Women's League, sure, our main job is to fight the patriarchy, but we definitely won't get involved with the real big political squabbles. Basically saying, we the Women's League, our role is not to actually influence our party in a significant way. It's to sit on the sidelines and avoid critiquing our men. Her literal quote was, "Part of the package is to remove ourselves from the fights of men. We are calling for all women to join the fight, even those in media houses, because it's a societal problem that we ought to address." So if the Women's League says that it's not a woman's role to get in the fights of men, leave them to fight, but all of the leaders in the most powerful positions in the ANC are men, what is the Women's League's contribution? None? But it's not just the ANC. The Democratic Alliance happens to have probably the most significantly powerful and long-lastingly powerful woman in South African politics. Love her or hate her, however you feel about her, whatever you want to say about her, Helen Zille is and remains a vanguard for women getting into real power and holding it in South African politics. And look, we've had our differences. She said some things. I said something back. We all remember how that went late last year. But you've got to give props where props are due. Helen Zille is the only woman to truly have been at the top of a dominant, powerful South African political party in recent history. But aside from that, the Democratic Alliance is not just all dudes, it's all white dudes. Think about the most prominent DA leaders right now. John Steenhuisen, Alan Windey, Jordan Hill Lewis, Chris Pappas. They're all white dudes. And the DA's recent history is littered with prominent black women leaders leaving. I know that the broad critique is correctly that many black leaders have left the Democratic Alliance, but amongst them, many are very significant black women who looked like they were going far in the party only to be snuffed out and removed. And the EFF is hardly better. The EFF claims to be champions of women and they try to be hyper-revolutionary in their ideas about feminism, but all of their leaders are men. And they have a significant crisis in that very few women vote for them. They really struggle to attract women at all. And it's almost certainly because they present a hyper-masculine, hyper-macho, alpha, toxic, dominant face to the country. And I'm not just talking about Julius Malema. I'm talking about the EFF's vibe, their way of doing things. And don't take it from me. Julius Malema himself has spoken often on the record in public about how they struggle to attract women to vote for them. And you know from listening to this show that just in the last month, we have seen what happened to Naledi Chirwa, one of the most significant EFF women leaders. And so we're left in a real mess. South African politics truly is a men's game, and it's almost as though men deploy women in their parties to try to reel in women voters, and then as soon as the votes are in, they go back to running the world themselves. And it's really dispiriting because, let facts be facts, the ANC has really screwed up and failed this country in the last two decades. But another way, another lens we can put on it is that men in power have failed and screwed up this country for the last few decades. And men in power have not been able to stem the tide of gender-based violence. So that's the issue with women in politics. What is truly happening if you look past the kind of veneer of gender equality in South Africa? Sorry, I know this was a tough episode, but it's something we got to think about. You will go and look at that ballot on the 29th of May and you're not going to see women. And it's something that we as a country need to critique and take seriously. Thank you for listening. Go check out our video version of this episode on YouTube and also our Patreon, where we have exclusive interviews once a week with experts on big South African issues. And that will cost you less than 100 rand a month to be a subscriber to our Patreon. Of course, that 100 rand a month or less than goes to keeping the lights on and keeping the show ticking over. We'll be back on Thursday.